Welcome to the brief. It's Dave O'Neill here. I'm sitting in my car, but it's not going anywhere because I'm in the COVID state of Victoria. No live gigs to speak of, so just been ringing comics to see how they're going today. Not so much a comic as a comedy writer or producer. Sergio Paradise, he was definitely a fixture of radio here in Melbourne, has been for a while, and we first met on the Eric Banner Tonight Show. So he's got a bit of a different perspective to the some of the usual suspects I get on. Let's ring Serge, see how he's going.
Dave?
Hey, how are you?
Very well, mate. Yourself?
I'm all right. I'm all right. Thanks for talking to me today. You're in Melbourne, though, so you mustn't be that busy.
No, I'm not that busy, I've got to admit. I am enjoying lockdown more than I thought I would. The thing I've found the last couple of days wandering around the streets is just trying to identify people by their eyes.
It's hard.
It's really... I had a couple of people look at me with a glimmer of recognition.
Thinking...
You must know a lot of guys with bloodshot, puffy eyes. You know?
I've had people say hello to me. And I'm like, I don't know who you are. I can't tell.
Well, yeah, but you have that public persona where people think they do know you anyway,
yes.
But they recognize you from your eyes. But there is one thing I read yesterday that's encouraging. That apparently there's been a spike just in this last week in the sales of cask wine. It doesn't have to come back.
So people are hitting the depths of, you know, depravity. Cask wine.
Why buy four bottles when you can buy a box with a bladder in it? You know?
I was reminiscing with someone. I think it was on another podcast about how I remember going around to like one of my friend, a girl's house, and her mum just had the cask of wine on the kitchen bench, and she'd constantly fill up her glass from the, you know, the Billabong. Maybe it was Billabong.
Yeah, Billabong. Yeah.
Yeah, that's it. Now, I was just on this podcast, I always try and reminisce about when I have first met someone, and you pointed it out to me when we chatted. It was the Eric Banner Tonight Show.
It was. Going back before Eric went off to become an international movie star, and there was that short-lived sort of Tonight Show, the live one that Channel 7 did.
Yes.
And I got a job there as a segment producer, and I knew who you were, but that was a sort of a level of recognition that didn't sort of get much... reciprocation, no. I have to say.
All I remember is that we did about eight episodes, maybe?
Yeah.
Eight or nine?
Seven or eight. Yeah, it wasn't even a whole series.
And then he did a sketch show, which I was also involved in after that.
Yeah.
But that Tonight Show, I mean, you know what? Have you worked on any other Tonight Shows? Because they're hard.
No, that's the only one I've ever done. And it was hard work because people go, oh, you know, it's only on for 90 minutes a week, but, you know, you've got to write stuff and film sketches. And that show, remember, Channel 7, I don't know how much money they spent, but they...
A lot.
They used to fly, for every episode, they would fly out a so-called celebrity from America.
Yes, and they flew out Mickey Rooney.
Yeah, for the first show. And I remember I missed the first show, and then about the third one, do you remember they flew out John Wayne Bobbitt?
The guy who had his
penis cut off by his wife.
Oh, you've got a good memory. Did you have to hang out with him or?
Yeah, well, he was possibly the dumbest bloke I've ever met in my life.
Yeah.
And we took him down to this teppanyaki restaurant in Chapel Street.
Oh, with the knives.
And we were trying to do, you know, this sketch of the teppanyaki chef with the super sharp knives chopping up all these salamis in front of him.
Yeah.
And John Wayne didn't even get the joke.
Yeah.
And I remember getting back to the office and Steve Izard was there, who's the executive producer. Eric, and they've gone, how'd you go? And we've all sort of looked at him sheepish and had to go, you're not getting a lot of comedy out of John Wayne.
And then didn't Poyter interview him? Because Poyter, Eric would interview someone as himself, and then come on as Poyter.
As Poyter.
And he was interviewed. He must have interviewed John Wayne Bobbitt.
I honestly can't remember, but I do remember that show that night. After it wasn't one of the better ones because John Wayne was such a hopeless guest.
Yeah.
But we remember we were having a drink in Eric's dressing room upstairs after the show, and you know, Vizard was there. I think you were there, and yeah. Steve Bedwell and Eric.
Yeah.
And John Wayne's there, and everyone's sort of making small talk, and you know, and John Wayne all of a sudden goes, "Do you want to see it?"
Oh, that's right.
And everyone's going, "Oh shit, yeah." And so
because it got sewed back on, didn't it? His wife chopped it off.
And it looked exactly like what you'd expect there to be, just a sort of a ring of stitches around it, you know. And like, you know, everybody who worked on the show wanted to have a look, and that was like, you know, we didn't take selfies in those days,
no.
Which is fortunate.
And also, what was his name? David, the guy from American, the Morning American show, who played the piano and sang and.
Oh, yeah.
He was like the Good Morning America. Bloke. David Tench? Yeah. David someone? David?
Tesh?
David Tesh. Yes.
No, John Tesh.
John Tesh.
John Tesh.
I remember he was on. I remember he was on singing songs and
I remember Poyter interviewing Fabio too.
That's right.
Fabio had no idea about Poyter's.
I used to write all the Poyter stuff. I used to write on full front. I wrote a lot of the Poyter stuff.
Oh, yeah.
I loved it, but. Yeah. Yeah, I'm sure Eric's forgotten all of this. But anyway, in a long... but they were good times. But you know what? The problem with tonight's shows in Australia, there's not enough guests.
That's right.
Yeah, you'll just end up with, these days you get reality TV stars who would be good as guests.
And you get them or, you know, you run out of...
Oh, Sophie Monk, Osher Gunsberg.
Yeah, but they were fun days. I mean, gee whiz. I mean, I often remember, you know, every time Vizard would walk in to the office, we'd all be playing cricket in the writer's room, you know, with a tennis ball and one of those long cardboard tubes as a bat, playing slip sketches.
And you were in the grill team. I remember I might have met you on the grill team too, which for people who don't know.
Yeah, yeah.
It was seminal radio show on Triple M. Wasn't it?
Yeah, it was Melbourne. Triple M, yeah, because I was sharing a house with Trevor Marmalade at the time.
Oh, God.
And Jason. And this was, and this is before Trev sort of, he was.
Was it before the footy show?
Well before the footy show. He was sort of breaking through to a national audience because he was doing a fair bit on Hey Hey.
Yeah, I remember. He hosted Hey Hey one night.
He did. Yeah. I remember he was pretty toey that week.
Yeah.
But we were good mates with with Eddie Maguire and all that because we sort of started at Channel 10 at the same time.
Yeah, right.
And when Eddie first moved out of home from Broadie to South Melbourne, it was round the corner from Trevor and my place. And most Monday nights, he'd come to our joint and we'd go for a steak at the pub up the road.
Oh.
And we just sort of inadvertently review the weekend on whatever happened what happened in the footy and in the nightclubs and who pulled one and who didn't and all this sort of stuff. And we were sitting there laughing our heads off one night, and I remember saying, geez, if we'd recorded this conversation tonight, it would have made a really funny radio show.
Yeah, right.
And Eddie sort of glared at me and goes, we'll do that one day. And, of course, I promptly forgot about it. But Eddie being Eddie, 2 years later, he rings up and he goes, look, Eddie and Trev and I and Jane Kennedy and Glenn Robbins and these guys were getting a Saturday morning radio show and we want you to be like the showbiz sort of piss reporter.
Yeah,
right. And I said, fine. They said, well, you're going to have to think of a stupid name for yourself. And which I did and thought, well, this will last 3 weeks if I'm lucky, you know.
Yeah.
And that's how the grill team started, basically.
That's how you got your name, Sergio Paradise.
Yeah. I pinched that from a genuine entertainer, a guy who he was like this Italian cabaret singer who released a couple of albums.
Oh, really?
On the Fable label, I think.
I love Fable. I remember Fable Records.
Yeah. Now, I remember I was renovating this house in Elston. You know, you pull up the lino and there's some old newspapers on the floor. There was one there. It was like a What's On the Gold Coast newspaper from about 1972.
Fantastic. Yeah.
And here was this picture of this, you know, like, you can only describe him as this sort of woggy cabaret singer in a velvet jacket.
Yeah.
Advertised to be playing at this dud lounge in Surfer's Paradise.
Fantastic.
And I just love the idea that he called himself Sergio Paradise in Surfer's Paradise. And so I just said to Eddie, I'm just going to pitch this bloke's name, whoever he is, thinking nobody will even know or care. And it sort of stuck for the next 20 years, unfortunately.
But the grill team was, then it was dry for a long time, wasn't it? Wasn't it
dry
or breakfast?
We did 2 years Saturday mornings.
Yeah.
And Jane Kennedy left, and then I think Lisa Hensley came in for the second year. And then it sort of went to drive, and people were sort of dropping out and dropping in, and they'd bring Dermot Brereton in and Dougie Hawkins for a while, and then I was producing it for a while and still doing the Surge crap on Fridays. And
it's not a bad idea just naming a show with a generic name, because anyone can come and go.
Yeah, exactly. It's not a bad idea.
So it's not like something like Duggan. Remember when Jason Dunstall did a show with Dougie Hawkins called Dougie and Dunstall?
Yeah.
Remember that show?
And, yeah, absolutely.
You can't replace one of them because their names are in the title.
And they do that with nearly all the shows now. You know what's Chrissy Brownie Chrissy and Brownie. Sam.
Yeah,
Sam and
yeah,
Brownie. I mean, you know, you do a fair bit with those guys and they're great. But
can't replace them. The
old thinking of a, you know, as you say, an all-encompassing name where you can just sort of bring players in off the bench whenever you feel like it. It's probably, you know, not a bad idea these days.
Did it go national, the grill team, or was it just Victoria?
Second year, it went national on the, just with the Saturday morning.
Right, okay.
I don't think it did that well sort of in Sydney and Brisbane, because we were very sort AFL. AFL-centric and very Melbourne.
So you also produced a lot of other shows. You did Keynotes, I saw, and I'm which Richard Wilkins. Didn't it replace Sale of the Century?
It was one of those, because Sale of the Century would break, you know, in December or something, and Channel 9 in those days would do a 13-week run of another show to replace Sale.
Oh, those were the days.
Yeah, and this year it was Keynotes.
Oh,
and my boss at Grundy said to me, "Oh, you know, do you want to step up from the level you're at to being a producer of a show? It's a music show and it'll probably be a lot of fun." And we got, you know, Channel 9 want Richard Wilkins to host it. And we said, this will be great fun. And it was good fun, but it was a shocking show. It was an ordinary format that had been created in its entirety by Reg Grundy himself.
Oh, really?
So.
And what did you have to do? Guess the tune? I remember watching it, but I can't remember the details.
The first few rounds you had to guess the word in the lyrics, and we'd play a bit of the song and stop the music, you know.
Yeah.
And there'd be three alternatives there, so it might be easy, hard, and slow, and the correct answer is take it easy or something.
Yeah, okay, I get it. Yeah.
And then you had to guess a tune played on a keyboard. It was pretty lame.
But they do that on Rock Quiz, so it's not that lame. You know what I mean? Like, just
it was based on, I think, that back in the 50s and 60s, they had Name That Tune and stuff like that.
Right,
you know?
It was a
more modern version of this.
It's interesting, is it? Because I was in England in the early 90s, and I saw Nevermind the Buzzcocks on TV.
Yeah, and what a great show.
Yeah, and so that's where Spicks and Specks, it's a very similar show, but we didn't have Buzzcocks in Australia. So I found out this production company owned the rights to it. This is before Spicks and Specks and before Rock Quiz. And I had a meeting with them, and I said, you guys should do a music quiz. You should do the Buzzcocks, the Australian version.
Yeah.
I'll be in it. And I remember the guy saying, music quiz shows won't work in Australia. You're going to have to get Danny Minogue and Bert Newton as the team captains. You need big names. I reckon about 6 months later, Spicks and Specks was on the air, and then Rock Quiz.
Yeah. So, and then Rock Quiz,
yeah. Yeah, anyway.
And both of which turned out to be long-running and much-loved programs. I mean, how many times did you do Spicks and Specks? Oh, you 50, have held the record, didn't
55,
you?
55, mate. Whatever. We don't go on. We don't mention it.
No, we don't count, you know.
Someone counted. And also, did you do... was it Price is Right or one of those ones?
Yeah, Price is Right. I'd left Grundy's. I'd been doing stuff on Sale of the Century and left. Yeah. So I was just getting jack of it. And
hanging out with Murray was it the Murray era? Murray and...
Yeah, Murray and Bingham.
And his wife.
And Nicky Buckley. Nicky, yeah.
I saw them at a gig last year. Yeah. And their son...
Yeah.
Whose name is Jasper, I remember. And
yeah,
I said, oh, you're good looking. Oh, I wonder why. Yeah. They're nice people, though. Lovely.
They're great. Yeah. I mean, but you're dead right. They're both, you know, super good looking parents.
Yes.
You'd be stiff if you were their kid and you look like you or me. Yeah. You know?
What happened?
Yeah. I left Sale of the Century and I got a job on Good Morning Australia with Bird just for 6 months.
GMA. I did GMA.
On GMA. Oh. Gee, that was an education. Just watching an absolute master at work king. Every morning. Yeah.
Yes.
Just the absolute king.
I love how he would make members of the crew sing and stuff. Remember he used to do Belvedere, give us a poem Belvedere, now, Belvedere. Yeah. And then he'd make the producers sing. Like, sing a song, Michelle. Michelle Van Ray, he'd make her sing. And, like,
yeah. Oh. And the camera guys were so used to it. Before the producer could say no or get out of the studio, there'd be four cameras would have spun around and had on the monitor so she had performed. But yeah, I was getting a bit jack of getting up at 5 a.m. every day.
Yeah, of course.
And then they rang up and said, do you want to do The Price is Right? And I said, well, no, it's the daggiest show ever. And they said, yeah, but it's also one of the biggest, hardest shows to put together. So if you can pull this off, you can pull off anything.
And who was hosting at that stage? Because a few hosts.
It was Larry Ender.
Oh, yeah, he's good. Yeah.
Yeah, Larry was brilliant at it, you know. And they used to, you know, when he first started, put him through what they called at Grundy's game show school, where he had to learn every separate game on The Price is Right, you know, because remember they had the golf game and the little one where the bloke walked up the cliff and, you know.
Well, the classic one is you had to rank the objects, and they'd always put something in that would. Did you have to pick something that would throw people like a stereo unit that's worth, you know, $4,000? You're like, what?
Yeah.
Or holidays. Holidays were often, you couldn't pick their price.
No, you couldn't. No. They had to put them in order in the showcase at the end. Yes. And that was where you'd always, when you were programming the prizes, and you'd think, let's see. A trip to the Gold Coast worth $1,500, they're not going to pick that as being worth more than the two-doored fridge, you know. Which, you know, so I was a bit nasty like that. But we always used to describe Price is Right as being the quiz show for people who weren't smart enough to get on Sale of the Century.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Well, all you needed to know was how much, you know, a can of fly spray was in Boers.
They were a real thing, though, because those shows were like a 4 o'clock, 5:30 sort of show, weren't they?
Yeah.
They were before dinner, kind of.
5:30, Price is Right, as the lead into the Channel 9 news. They took it very seriously at Channel 9.
Oh, yeah.
If the numbers or the figures started dropping off, you get the phone call. And that's how, what with Sale of the Century, whenever it would drop off, you'd get the call, say, about time we had a celebrity special.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I used to love them, the celebrity specials.
Oh, they're hilarious. They're hilarious. Trevor Marmalade actually won one of those. You know, he won a battle of the comedians, I think.
I would have loved. I mean, I went on The Brainiest Comedian, which was hosted by Sandra Sully, at Channel 10, and I came fifth because I'd never watched a show. That's a big tip for anyone who goes on a quiz show. Yeah. Watch at least one episode. Because I had no idea what was going on. I thought they were just going to ask me general knowledge, but they had a thing where you had to make words out of other words. Like they were like an IQ. I never
saw it.
You know, make as many bits of Mensa? Fruit. Yeah, like a Mensa thing. I'm like, Peter Hellier won the one that I went on. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, pretty smart. Why? Because he got, there was one category called dates. What date is Anzac Day? What date is Easter? And he was just like this. And you know how he knew them all? Footy.
Trotting them off.
Yeah, footy.
Oh, footy, because, you know, he knows the Easter.
Yes.
And all that. Yeah. And the Anzac Day game's always in.
Yeah, he told
April 25.
He said it was all. I said, how did you know all those dates? He went, footy. Because I'm a footy head. So what other shows did you work?
Oh, Sale of the Century was probably one of the biggest ones. Yeah. And you talk about people preparing for it. The trick always with Sale was how quick you could buzz in.
Yes.
Because all the contestants would know nearly every answer, but you had to be fast. And I remember this one guy, he went through and he won the lot, and he was so quick. And I said to him afterwards, when they won the lot, we'd always have a drink after in the boardroom. And I said, how come you got so quick? And he said, because I never watched the show. I would record it every night on his VHS, of course.
Hmm.
And he said, and play it back. And when the question was asked, I would hit the pause button when I thought I knew the answer.
Oh, wow.
And yeah, he would pause it all that. And so he realized that the trick to it was you buzz in and then you would, the host, Glenn Ridge or Tony Barber, would still probably get out another two or three words before he said, "Yes, Dave, and what's the answer?" You know?
Yes.
So he worked out the whole technique to it and won the lot. And good luck to him. You know, he did his own work.
And who was the guy when Glenn Ridge would pick up the phone and speak to, like, an intellectual who knew everything?
Oh.
Was that different people? That was former winners and stuff, wasn't it?
Yeah, former winners. I think in the early days, there was a woman called Fran. I can't remember.
That's right, yeah. Yeah.
And then in my year, it was David Polterak.
That's right.
A lot early on. David's, you know, he set himself up nicely. He does stand-up comedy in Sydney now.
Oh, does he? David Polterak. Yeah, right.
Yeah, he does, yeah. But he was the one on the end of it. And you've got to remember that those guys would write all the questions.
Yeah.
But there was no Google in those days.
No, that's right. Yeah.
So he would work with just a massive set of Encyclopedia Britannicas and world books. And you always had to have like three examples of what was the correct answer before it was acceptable.
Yeah, right. Now, more recently, I saw you've been doing a podcast with Titus.
The great man Titus O'Reilly.
Very funny. Who's had like quite a quick rise to fame. As we know, in show business, it can take years. But he became famous on Twitter, basically, for his footy.
Yeah.
For his footy jokes.
That's how I sort of stumbled upon him. I used to read all his tweets and I go, I don't know who this bloke is, but he's pretty bloody funny.
Oh, he's very funny,
And I remember just tweeting back to him one day, saying, "Oh, that's your best line ever." And he came back to me and said, "Oh, I remember you from the grill team and, you know, blah, blah, blah. We should get together." And I said, "Yeah." So I said, "Let's try and do a podcast perhaps, see how that goes." And it's been really successful. But himself, and I'm very much the, you know, the second banana there, which is fine. But he's done very well. He's written three or four books.
Yeah.
He was on the front bar last night. He's been on the project a fair bit. So he's doing pretty well, old Titus.
Yeah, yeah. Because I remember him when he was in his corporate role before he was a comedian. He was like a crisis manager.
He was in crisis management.
So you'd see him occasionally on the news when speaking for some company when they had an oil spill or something like that.
Yeah, yeah. And he worked for a couple of politicians. And he'd be. And it's funny seeing him in his like trademark pork pie hat now. Yeah. Because if you go back, you'd see him. He'd be one of those blokes in a suit behind a politician.
Yes, nodding,
nodding their head. Whenever the Minister for Transport would try and justify another, you know, fuck up with Mikey, he'd be in the background nodding his head.
So what's the podcast called? Because people that listen to podcasts listen to podcasts, so we should plug
it. Yeah, the Titus and Sergio Variety Hour.
And it's sport kind of based?
It's mainly all sport with a fair smattering of AFL in there, but we keep an eye out for whatever's going on sports-wise.
Of course.
Yeah, it's all good fun.
Because the last time I saw you was at my second last live gig for the year, March the 14th or 13th, at the Sandringham Yacht Club.
And it was. You great spot that night. You were on there with Richard Stubbs and Lima.
Yeah, it was a great night. And
yeah, it was a ripping night.
And I think your mother-in-law had bought you a ticket. Is that right?
She bought me a ticket for my birthday in February.
Oh, gee, like what you want to see is more comedy. Yeah, great. Yeah,
she said, you like the comedy stuff. I said, thanks for that. Thanks. I probably could have just rang them up and got in, but that's great.
Good
but it was a top night. And as you say, that was probably, what was your second last gig? And then things started to lock down after that.
Well, they were even considering cancelling that in March, but they went ahead with it. Because there's not much COVID Bayside, especially back then, you know.
No, not back then. I think one of the very expensive Brighton aged care homes is riddled with it now.
Yeah, gone down. Great. Now, I've got to ask my questions I ask everyone. What was the last thing you cooked?
Last thing I cooked, chicken parma last night from two teenage boys.
Oh, yeah, they love, my kids love parmas too.
So
how do you cook the parma? Do you fry it or you put it in the oven or?
Yeah, no, in sort of.
Shall I light, fry?
In oil. Mm. In oil. I buy the pre, you know, crumbed nice chicken fillets in oil. and then a bit of prosciutto.
Oh, nice.
Some chopped Italian tomatoes. And melt the cheese in the oven.
Well, you are Italian, so. Sergio Paradise. So. But it is one of the things me and the kids were saying last night, one of the things we miss is like pub food.
Yeah.
Is just going out for a meal somewhere.
Oh, like, exactly.
Right. And go on.
I was just saying that, and even not even just a pub meal, just to say to somebody, I said to a mate the other day, I spoke to, you know, just normally we just go down and have a couple of pots or something at the Sandringham Hotel. Can't do. I said, when is this ever going to end?
Yeah, you know,
it's terrible. Bizarre. Yeah. It's no fun. And you must be missing the gigs.
Yes.
Apart from the fact that's what you do for a living.
Yeah.
it's you know, you got to keep your hand in and there is that joy of being on stage in front of a live audience.
And don't forget that joy of leaving your house.
Without the worry. Yeah. Well, I went out this morning just to buy some milk. And I saw a cop car at the end of the street, and I thought, "Am I allowed out now?" You know,
what time is it? Yeah.
I hope my rego's paid. You know,
I know. What was the last thing you watched?
I watched mainly just been the footy lately.
Yeah. So what happened? You're a Melbourne supporter, I know that.
Yeah, I'm a Melbourne supporter.
What happened last night? Did they win or?
Yeah, they won.
Oh, that's good.
Oh, well, they had to win last night. They were playing Adelaide, who have not won in over 12 months.
That's incredible. Adelaide haven't won. And do you reckon, I'm fascinated by this camp they went on. That camp?
Yeah. I mean, the details are sort of like
terrible.
Come out in dribs and drabs. But, yeah, it just sounded like, you know, when a camp that they used to be like fitness camps where, you know, you'd have blokes running up and down sand hills and what have you. And you go, yeah, I get that. But when it becomes like a mental torture and stuff like that, I mean, you know.
Well, so for people don't know, Adelaide lost the grand final. They were very close to winning. They were a very good team.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm no AFL expert, but I remember watching it. And then they sent them on this camp and it just a lot of them left and it was like psychological torture.
Yeah, it was. And saying all sorts of things and lots of stuff that hasn't been revealed. That
well, you had to say
some of the indigenous players and
whose wife would you sleep with, or there was something. Or you had to say it in public. Whose partner would you sleep with? Oh, I'd sleep with that guy's wife. Oh, great.
Or and they had to suggest that, you know, to show how bonded they were as a team, it would be okay if your teammate did sleep with your wife. You know?
Yes.
And the fact that they did all this and then. Yeah, half a dozen of their players said, "Look, you know, I'm out of here." Sort of tells you that it probably wasn't the best idea that anyone's ever had. But
poor Adelaide.
And they are dead set battling at the moment.
Yeah. What was the last bit of human contact you had? Well, you've got kids.
I've got two teenage boys, so you know they're at home now. Remote learning.
Yeah.
Which I reckon remote is actually a word that means less. Less learning.
I know one of my friends that put on Facebook, I got my kids' reports yesterday. Don't know why I didn't write them, but anyway. That's funny. It's been great talking to you. And we didn't even get to talk. We should mention we both grew up in the outer suburbs of
Melbourne. The outer eastern.
You were Glen Waverley? Were you Glen Waverley?
Yeah, Glen Waverley boy. When we first moved out there as a little kid, we were sort of at the eastern edge of Glen Waverley where there was our place. And then there were just paddocks all the way to the Dandenongs.
Yeah, I remember that.
And then a few years later, we moved up near the police academy.
Oh,
near VFL Park.
Yes.
Which was great. So we used to sneak into VFL Park when we were kids to avoid the 30 cents that you had to pay to get in as a kid. You could buy a pie and a can of Coke.
Yeah. And because you're a bit older than me, so you were in the Sharpie era, which was... They were gangs of youth who were dressed like they were like skinheads, kind of.
Yeah, skinheads with little rat tails at the back.
Oh, and you get on the train and they'd all come on in a gang, and they were so scary.
They were, we used to worry about what the Glen Waverley ones. They were sort of the really lame ones, the Glenny boys. The ones we used to worry about were the Holmes Glen Sharps.
Yes,
the ones from Holmes Glen who, like Holmes Glen these days, is mainly known for having a TAFE.
Yes.
Which which ironically is what the Sharps probably needed, was a better education, you know.
And the Geordie boys from Jordanville.
The Geordie boys.
Because they were all housing commission areas around there too, so they're really tough.
Yeah, they were a lot tougher than us sort of middle-class boys.
Yeah,
white boys, you know?
Yes.
And they could genuinely fight. And
because we had the Blackburn Sharps. But, you know, Blackburn, whatever. But the Geordie boys.
Geordie boys, yeah. They really had a real reputation ahead of them. If you heard, I remember being on the Glen Waverley train going into the city one night.
Yeah.
And somebody burst in when we stopped at a station and he said, "Geordie boys are in the next carriage." And so we were, "Oh shit, we better get out at the next stop, you know, wait for the next train."
Definitely. I just remember we were getting the train into the city to see a band and we had, we weren't that alternative, but we had slightly, you'd have to say, trendy clothes. I was there with my brother, who was a bit of a punk kind of, and these Sharpies got on, and they were just staring. And my brother's like, "Don't say anything. Just don't say anything." And the guy did the classic, "What are you fucking looking at?" "We weren't looking at anything, mate. We're not."
Yeah. You know. Actually, you sort of look all around the carriage and out, but you take a great interest in the trees that were flashing past outside the train, you know.
Oh, I do remember one got on and started pashing this girl, and then his mates are going, "Come on, get," and he jumped off the wrong side of the train. He pulled the door open and jumped onto the tracks. So they weren't the brightest, the Sharpies. They weren't.
No, they weren't.
I don't think anyone went on to be a surgeon in the Sharpie world.
As I say, they needed the tape.
They needed the tape. Well, great to talk to you, Sergio, and keep an eye for his podcast with Titus O'Reilly. Yes,
yeah,
have a look.
The variety, yeah.
Good to talk to you, Serge.
You too, Dave. Cheers, mate.